from the corner. Yes! And a foul!
Is he having himself an afternoon? Schneider feeling
his third three already.
On the drive goes Patty Casey for the basket.
Backdoor cut, Swider with the jam. This is Swider in close and one.
Welcome to episode 11, Patty. 11 after a brief hiatus on Thanksgiving break. Hopefully, you guys, everyone, all the listeners had a great Thanksgiving, and we're happy to be back with another episode of the Swider Show.
Yep.
With Patty Casey.
With Patty Casey. Episode 11. That's actually my high school jersey number, Swider.
So we're going
big time.
This is episode. Patty Casey high school number.
Yeah, actually, you know why I wore. Do you know why I wore 11 in high school? I think I've told you this before.
I don't.
This is not a lie. I was a freshman in high school. This was long before I was at Cuse. I wore 11 because of Tyler Ennis. Little fun fact.
Wow.
Yep. Someone told me. One of my friends said I play a little bit like him. So I was like, you know what? I'll wear his number. But
wow, big Syracuse guy. Big Syracuse podcast.
Little foreshadowing there, but yeah, like you said, happy Thanksgiving to all. How was your Thanksgiving, Swider?
My Thanksgiving was good. I actually stayed here in LA for Thanksgiving. My family was all in Fort Myers for my sister's Thanksgiving tournament, so stayed here. Actually, our G League coach Miles Simon was gracious enough to have us over his house.
No way.
For Thanksgiving, so it was a great meal.
Yeah.
A bunch of my teammates went over there as well, so it was good to be in a little family atmosphere for Thanksgiving. Yeah. How was your Thanksgiving, Patty?
It was phenomenal. I was in Scranton. I'm still in Scranton. but yeah, very fun day, fun weekend. Good to see everyone.
Yeah, sure.
I had my 5-year reunion for high school.
Wow, shout out how to was that?
Scranton Prep class of 2017. It was a blast. It was very fun. If you don't follow me on Instagram, go check out the Insta. I was wearing a nice sport coat. Nice button down, you know how it goes.
Yeah, that was a nice picture, Patty. I think I liked it.
Yeah, thank you. Oh, you did. Yeah. Well, it comes up as the priority thing, because you're fucking verified. But, for my first segue of the day, there was some things to be thankful about this past week with you personally, and getting back on the court. No.
Yeah. So I think last time we were on here. We were talking
about
my
MRI
day. Yeah, it's been a while. So almost 2 weeks ago now. It's crazy. But my bone got a lot healthier in this next MRI, which was huge. I was able to start getting on the court a little bit. Started out with some plyometrics for 4 or 5 days. Then started getting out on the court. So I did a 20-minute shooting workout, followed by 20-minute one-dribble pull-ups. Day off, one-dribble pull-ups. Had the weekend to kind of get back and did some treatment, did some lifts, and then today was my did a full 30-minute workout 2 days ago, and today was my first practice. So
nice.
Starting to run, starting to sprint, starting to kind of get my mojo back and just get back into working out, which is great. It's looking like another 2 weeks until I'm back playing out on the court, 2.5 weeks.
Nice.
I'm excited. Starting to feel like I'm getting back in the rhythm again.
You know,
back
to yourself.
Being around the guys. You know me, Patty.
It's not often where I would take
a lot of time off shooting a basketball. Never mind 2 months off of playing.
It's also I was gonna say, that's maybe the worst part about being hurt is, you definitely don't take it for granted every day, but I feel like human nature-wise, when you're practicing and you're healthy and you have stuff each day, you just kind of go day by day and show up everywhere and do it, and then all of a sudden you just can't play. It's the worst feeling in the entire world.
Yeah, and I've been blessed enough to be pretty besides my freshman year at Villanova.
Yeah. I just knocked on wood. Yep.
Knocked on wood, but I've been pretty fortunate to not have a lot of serious injuries. I always pride myself on being durable. So, it's definitely a switch up for me, especially seeing the team start the season, not have me there. And, Syracuse, not a lot of people know this, but I had a bad ankle injury. Patty knows this. I had a bad ankle injury for 2.5 weeks before this, the season started. So,
That was
last year.
October, mid October, right? Right before
mid-October,
the season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
yeah. That was tough.
Man.
That was when, was that why I drove you back? Yeah, right?
That is why you drove me back.
How about that? That was a great friend move by me. Yeah, we're going to talk about that.
Unbelievable friend move by Patty. I'm just going to tell a story real quick. So my mom had found this crazy sort of treatment for my ankle. Basically, I had to go back to Massachusetts, Boston area. Obviously, I'm from Rhode Island, but I had to go back. Mm-hmm. So I called Coach Boeheim. I'm like, hey, Coach, is it okay if I go back? I'm not going to miss any practice. I'll be back. He's like, yeah, but it wouldn't be counterproductive for you to drive. And I was like, coming from a Hall of Famer, that actually makes sense.
Yeah, it did make sense.
So Patty was kind enough to drive me back.
To Albany, right? That's halfway.
Drove me to Albany, two and a half hours away. And then he had to drive 2.5 hours back.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't mind doing it. I was in your giant car.
Yeah.
But that was the day I said to you, I'll do this if you have me as a co-host on your future podcast.
There was probably some podcast talk.
Yeah, so that was the long game there. He's a lot of Bieber on the radio.
Oh, it was great.
Yeah. But I wanted to ask about, like, the difference in Thanksgiving between college and the NBA. Like, are you guys – you said your teammates were at that dinner. It's your assistant coach's house. But, like, are you guys hanging out throughout the holiday? Or is it, like – because in college, it's if you have practice, you're usually at one of those tournaments. It's like you spend basically the whole week with the team, and there's team meals and all that. So how was, like, your first holiday? Was it different?
Yeah, it's very different. I mean, I think if you ask any professional athlete this, they would tell you the biggest adjustment between college and the NBA is dealing with time, because you have a lot of time. You're going to have a lot of opportunities to get yourself into different things, right? So it's how do you manage that time? How do you try and make that time the best? Is it rest? Is it starting a new business venture? Is it starting a podcast?
Yep.
You know what I mean? Is it because you can only work out 3-4 hours a day at most.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
And during the season, you try and limit that as much as possible. Coaches are getting off the court; they're all concerned about rest, which is obviously an important thing. But I think the one thing about the NBA is that everyone goes home and has their own individual lives. Like three guys on my G League teams has wives. A bunch of other guys have family out here. So some guys are going to their family's house for Thanksgiving. Some guys were flying home for Thanksgiving. So it was just awesome to have Coach Miles Simon being able to invite me over his house, make me feel like welcomed. It was a good experience. I would be lying if I said if I didn't wish I was with my family, but good first Thanksgiving out here.
That's what's weird about, I mean, you're not going to complain about it, but it's weird. Like, it's kind of a lonely time as an athlete when it's like Thanksgiving Day and like you're out there and you're like, damn, like, obviously, you're very grateful. It's a day of giving thanks. You're thankful to be on the Lakers, but it's definitely human nature to be like, I kind of wish I was home, like, doing the Thanksgiving thing. You know what I mean?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I've missed the last two Christmases. I don't remember the last time I was home for Thanksgiving. But it's just one of those things, you know what I mean? A lot of people would die to be in these shoes and you know what I mean? Just have the opportunity to play for Lakers or play for Syracuse or Villanova, and I definitely don't take that for granted.
So right?
I'm definitely blessed and thankful, man.
That's actually why I'm not in the NBA, is so I could enjoy my holidays and everything.
Scranton is just such a magical place.
Yeah, exactly. You got to stick around. You know,
that 5-year reunion wouldn't even go on with if you weren't there.
Yeah, if I was on the Lakers, that'd be so much cooler. But. That we actually forgot to do a mailbag question of the week on the Jake Marsh episode, which we didn't realize until after the fact, but we had a little bit longer of an opening that time. This week's mailbag question of the week's wider Thanksgiving theme, we're talking about it. What is your go-to, or what is your favorite Thanksgiving dish that's on the plate? What's your number one?
So back home, it's a little different this year because I wasn't back home. My grandmother makes a great stuffing for Thanksgiving.
Yep.
So back home, I would have to say stuffing. And then this year, they did a great job with the yams and mac and cheese. So I would probably say that those are my favorite two this year. What about you, Case?
That's your those are like your heavy hitters there. Mine's probably stuffing. I think my favorite part about Thanksgiving is a nice leftover sandwich the next day. Put on some toast, some mayo, put some stuffing on there. It's delicious.
I like the sound of that. Yeah. Someone actually said that in an interview that I watched. I forget who it was.
Well, I just said that. That's my take.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Okay, no, so. But yeah, that's good podcasting there. That's what everyone's doing this week, ranking their favorite dishes on Thanksgiving. So that'll probably just get us a couple hundred views.
Oh, big time.
But, yeah, I mean, Feast Week, this past week is one of the better weeks of sports of the entire calendar year with, like, there's just college basketball around the clock. They're, like, cutting to different gyms. Everything's all over the place. We were actually, me and, this is showing the family atmosphere of the Swider Show. Last Monday, Jake Sherrod and Adam Lewis, our producers, were on their way to New York to see the Orange play at Barclays in Brooklyn. I get a text at, I don't know, 3-4 o'clock, and they said their buddy had not been able, or he wasn't able to make it anymore. So they stayed at my house, Swider. You already know this, but I just had to brag about myself again.
That's unbelievable. That's
yeah.
I bet those guys were very thankful for your
hospitality. Exactly. In the theme of the week, yeah. Adam, how'd you like it? What's your review of my apartment?
First of all, I think you're forgetting a very important part of this story, is that you were also looking for tickets to the game that evening.
Oh, well, yeah, I had texted Pete late. Yeah, yeah, they did give me and my brother their two tickets.
You saved us a lot of money. We had a hotel and we got rid of it, and we stayed in Manhattan.
Yeah.
And, you know, I actually slept pretty well on the couch.
Yeah, I was going to say, probably wasn't the most comfortable quarters, but,
No, we had a couple beers, and I slept like a baby. It was great.
Yep. Yeah, it was a good time. It was good to see them in person, Swider, and not virtually.
That's great.
Sheridan's down with the flu, so he's missing his, what, 8th episode in a row? Nah, that was mean. Shout out to Jake Sheridan. Hopefully he's,
he's feeling better.
Yeah, obviously not. Yeah. But, yeah, like I was saying, great week of basketball. You got Maui, you got Atlantis. We were there last year. The Empire Classic in Brooklyn was cool. Tough L on the second night. But, yeah, I don't know. What do you think we should do some Q's talk here or save for a little bit later?
Yeah, let's do some Q's talk now, man.
Yeah.
First of all, I'm proud of the guys for how they fought in Brooklyn, man. Just watching that game brought a smile to my face. Obviously, no one likes losing. Trust me, I've done my fair share. I've had my tough losses, and I mean, I'm just super proud of those guys. I thought Judah played really well. Judah had an amazing first night. They beat a really good Richmond team. And then that second night, you know what I mean? When you play for Coach Boeheim, there's going to be games where the starters play 45 minutes, 42 minutes, 41 minutes. And on back-to-back nights for a young team, I thought they responded well. St. John's an older team. They've had guys who've been playing in college basketball for a long time. So just super proud of the guys, proud of the way they fought. It's not easy to play two games in two nights. It's not easy to play against two tournament caliber teams in two nights. And to be right there at the end, just speaks to the volumes that obviously they've worked really hard. And I was texting Patty a little bit. I was like, hey, like, see how much better they've gotten so far since the Colgate game. Like, I can only imagine what Boeheim's going to do with this team at the end of the year.
Yeah, they definitely got, like, I was very impressed seeing them in person. Jude is, like, unreal. He had that block and then that breakaway dunk. I was like, I don't know. The video, I'm going to do the in-person move that a lot of people do. Like, in person, it didn't do it justice. The video didn't. Because in person, that dunk was ridiculous. But, yeah, Joe, that was, like, I went to the Richmond game. That was one of the better halves I've ever seen him play, or better games, but specifically the first half, he was, like, doing whatever he wanted and just, like, couldn't miss.
He had one of those halves. I mean, Barclays treats him well. I mean, obviously not that the second game, but that the first half he had against Duke at Barclays, in my opinion, was the best half I've seen him play.
Just, yeah, it was unreal.
Might be selfishly just because I was there.
There, yeah.
But yeah, man, I'm super proud of this team. I think the coaches have done a hell of a job. really excited for the future of the program too. Just seeing all these young guys contribute. Justin Taylor having a huge 24-point game. Munir showing flashes. I think just overall Benny having a good second game. Like if you think about the team, you have Judah who's a freshman, maybe a one and done, may not be. You have Justin Taylor who's probably gonna be a 2 to 4 year player. Chris Bell, 2 to 4 year player. Munir is gonna be there for two more years after this year. You have Sai who could come back for another year. I'm just really excited for the growth of this team, especially, I mean, Kadir, we've seen what he could do in exhibition games. Yeah. I'm just really excited for the future of this team. I think the coach did a great job of identifying a talent that will stay, will be there, will help them grow throughout the years. And let me just give a quick shout-out. Kadir Copeland obviously doesn't play that much in the St. John's game, but he's the first one handing out water bottles.
Yeah, he's like a phenomenal bench guy. Like, his reaction... He's like staying the whole game. He celebrates after all the basket. Like, and then when they cut to him, like you were saying, he was handing out waters, and he's always talking to guys in timeouts and stuff. He's like as engaged of a teammate as anyone you'll see.
Oh, unbelievable! And I just had to give him a quick shout out just because I know when I was a freshman, I was a top recruit coming in, not playing as much, watching the end of the game. I wasn't in the moment enough to be able to grab water bottles, give them to my teammates, like make sure I'm in tune with everything that's going on in the game. Because at the end of the day, I mean, two overtime games, he could be the next guy being called in the game. And if you're not ready for that moment, you know Boeheim.
Yeah, that's it.
That's it. So,
he's like one of the more outgoing dudes. But the other thing with Cuse basketball, GMAC and Hakeem Warwick, both numbers getting raised to the rafters. That video on Twitter was like unbelievable. It made me shed a tear, Swider.
Yeah.
If we're being honest.
And we went back and forth about this. I mean, I'm getting chills down my back now just thinking about that. I just so happy and just. I get emotional too just thinking about just the career that GMAC had, all the moments that he had. And just for it to be wrapped up in. 20 years late, like you said, 20 years later.
It was pretty long overdue. I mean, obviously at any point, but probably should have happened a little while ago. But hey, we're not going to complain about it.
I mean, shoot, they probably thought he was going to go back and keep playing.
that's true. A little bit. That's a good point.
Akeem Warwick just got done playing. So.
Yeah, he was playing overseas, right?
Yeah, playing overseas, playing in the NBA for a long time. So, yeah. I mean, I'm just so happy. I saw Hakeem the other week when we played G League Ignite. Big Syracuse guy. James Sutherland is actually on that team as well.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. Jason Hart's the head coach, Cuse guy.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the Cuse family's so strong. Obviously, this is about GMAC and Hakeem, but, like, I remember me and you were just texting right after. I was like, when is this? Like, I hope I can go to this game.
Yeah. I'm definitely going. Obviously, you have your own season to kind of figure out the schedule and everything, but I cannot wait for that. Shout out to Hakeem. Hakeem's one, he's a Philly guy. Two, my number is technically now retired because I wore number one in Hakeem Warwick's.
There will never be another number one.
Will be on the court. But I was actually going to ask you this. So last year you wore 21. That's Moten's number, right? So what, did you call him and ask? And he, like, granted permission? Is that how that worked?
No, I think Syracuse just had so many amazing players and legendary players. You can't retire. I think you can't wear 15. I think once GMAC's number gets retired, you can't wear 3.
Can't wear 3. Okay. Oh, that's pretty cool. But, like, those numbers are on the sideline there on the other side.
Yeah.
Like, 21 was there. But
it's so funny. Last year... Red used to always say, yo, Moten's going to come up to you and say, I'm the real 21.
Yeah. Did he do that? He's actually a hilarious guy.
Yeah, hilarious guy. No, he's so nice. He didn't.
He was at a few games. He was also at the alumni game and, like, still just giving out buckets.
He's funny. He's funny. Yeah. He's a good dude, man.
But, I mean, the Orange, I'm really – it's a stressful time for them. I feel bad for all those guys because losing is the absolute worst, and they've had a couple heartbreakers back to back. But tomorrow they play Illinois. We're recording this Monday. That could be like a season changer. Like if they go into Champaign, beat Illinois at Illinois, like that's, it's like, all right, we're back on track now. You know what I mean?
One thing I always say about Syracuse is that the 2-3 is going to give them a chance in every single game they play.
Literally every game.
Every game you play. That's one. Mm-hmm. That's the one genius about Boeheim is that every single game you play, you're going to have a chance because the 2-3 zone. I think they're more athletic this year. I think they're maybe not as good as we were scoring the basketball, but they're going to be able to stay in the game, be competitive, have a chance in every single game because the way they defend, the way they rebound. Jesse with 21 rebounds last game.
Yeah, that was like, crazy.
I'm just excited. Obviously, Illinois is a great opponent. They're a great team. We're not saying that Syracuse could go in there and beat them easily. It's going to be a tough game. It's going to be a tough game.
Yeah,
I think when you have a Hall of Famer on your side, you have the defense. I've been impressed with the defense.
Yeah,
with the defense
it's so been
far.
Good.
I think we have a chance. I think we have a chance to surprise some people too.
I'm going to predict a win. I'm going to go on record. I'm predicting Orange 76, Illini 68.
Wow. That's my prediction. Be ecstatic. Yeah. I would be ecstatic.
Yeah. Like I said, it's just like frustrating for those guys, but they'll be fine. I don't think me or you are very concerned about
Disney.
Yeah.
I'm going to go on a hot take here. I think I get more nervous now than I did last year going into games.
Really? Like before games? Yeah, because it's helpless. No, it's like about, not.
Yeah, exactly. I always had like this like weird confidence, even when we were losing and stuff like that. This weird confidence about our team last year.
Yeah. Yeah, being.
But I don't. Now it's just
like a fan. I just get so nervous. Is way different. Yeah.
It's the worst. It's the worst. Mm-hmm. It's the best, but it's the worst.
Yeah. You get so excited for the games, but, like, the other day, that floater dropping in is just the worst thing ever. It's like,
yeah, it
just makes you depressed.
Basketball is such a funny game, man. It's the bounces, you know what I mean? You go either way, but that's what
between last year and this year with that shot, it's like there's so many instances you could point to where I feel like any other team in the country that probably bounces a couple more times and rolls off, but Cuse is just like another one of those where it's like, God damn it. Like, we had the game won, and then that bounce just goes in the hoop. It's so frustrating.
Well, it's also like Coach Boeheim, you've been so dominant for so long. He's seen every type of game.
And literally.
I remember even he said to us last year, like, at the beginning of the year, he's like, in my 46 years, I've seen everything. And then last year, he was like, I haven't seen that.
Yeah. There's like 10 games where it's like, God, like, how did that happen?
He's like, I've never seen a team be so unlucky before.
Unlucky bounces. Like, you're like, all right, well, that happened once. So, like, there's no way it happens like a couple games in a row. And then it just would. So frustrating. Yeah. But, yeah, we could talk about that all night.
Hey, but Patty, after Feast Week, who have you been impressed with in college basketball so far?
Houston. I know that's a boring answer because
they're the number one team in the country.
They're the number one team in the country. But I was very impressed by them. Also, what was I going to say? Oh, Purdue, didn't they beat Duke by like 20?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they're good. Kansas is obviously good again. They got kind of smoked in Atlantis. But Atlantis always has a good field. I mean, we were there last year. But
last year's field was...
Yeah,
it was cutthroat, man. I mean,
yeah, it was stacked.
I think Arizona State beat Arizona. Like, Arizona State went 0-3 out of that tournament, and they go around and beat like a top 5 team. Like,
yeah,
like, next week or something like that.
They beat UCLA, didn't they? Later on in the year.
Yeah, I think they had
one of them. Yeah,
good wins. They went on like a 5-game win streak. Like, like that field last year was just unreal in terms of just the level of talent. In that field, and I thought Atlantis was obviously really good this year, but I thought PKI 85,
yeah, PKI, yeah,
PKI, that was another really good tournament. Like,
yeah, how about Portland? Did you watch their games or no? They're like legitimately good.
No, I love watching them play.
Yeah.
They play the right way.
Yeah.
They took out my boys. They took out my boys one game.
Yeah, I was going to – I didn't want to bring up bad blood there, but they did beat Nova.
They took out my boys one game, and yeah, man, it's a part of college basketball. Like, Syracuse lost to Colgate. We lost to Colgate last year.
Yeah.
Like, those teams are dangerous, and – I just think it's mm-hmm. the way college basketball is now, like how good coaches are, how good these programs are, the transfer portal, you can get good really quickly. And, mm-hmm. and those teams like Colgate and Portland, like especially in these early season games, the transfer portal can be a blessing and a curse, right? Portland's probably had these guys playing together for 3 years. Colgate has these guys playing together for 4 years. And then you're trying to get your team together after the transfer portal, and then these teams who've been playing together
like
for 3 years,
months.
They catch it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely, we mentioned it before on the podcast, but there's just like a ton of really good basketball players in the country. That sounds like really simple to say, but Portland, like, I mean, they beat Nova by, what, 12? They very easily could have beat UNC, and then they're right,
Michigan State.
Yeah, right in the game against Michigan State. So,
speaking about a bounce, Portland couldn't get that bounce against Michigan State.
Oh, I didn't see the end of that game. What happened?
Oh yeah, a missed layup.
Oh really?
It was a tough contested layup.
Yeah.
It was a layup.
How about some Portland talk on the pod? Didn't see that coming. Yeah. We got a strong contingency out there, so the Portland fans will be thrilled. What were you gonna say?
I think the team that's impressed me the most has been UConn so far. I mean, obviously.
Really?
Yeah. Don't want to be a like. Not
traitor for the
fan.
Big East.
Not a UConn fan. I'm a Syracuse guy. Syracuse through and through. I bleed orange. But UConn's been impressive, man. I remember Donovan Klingon came on a visit last year, and he's been playing. Came on a visit to Syracuse, and he's been playing really well for UConn. He won the MVP of the PKI.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, man, I'm really impressed with them. They have a really deep bench. They have shooting. They have really good defensively. They have Adama Sanogo is probably the best player in the Big East right now since Justin Moore is hurt. Mm-hmm. So really impressed with them as well.
Yeah, that's I don't know. That I always like watching them play. It's such like a physical style that they play. It's like guys just like playing their ass off all the time, which is probably because of Hurley, I guess.
Yeah, Hurley's a great coach. He has a great staff. They put together obviously a really good roster. I mean, they had like seven transfers last year, so to be able to put that roster together quick and they won almost every single game by 20.
Yeah.
In the tournament too.
Yeah, they're nice. But pivoting to NBA talk in general, LeBron's back on the court.
Yep.
Played very well. Was that Saturday night? Yeah. That was a pretty entertaining game. What was it, like 145 to 138 or something? LeBron just easy 39 and 11 when he gets back. Like,
yeah, I saw him today, and I mean, I'm usually not like this, but I'm such a LeBron fan, you know what I mean? He put his hand out, I dapped him up. I was like, King's back.
Yeah.
Just
he is. What he said? Did you get a laugh? Nice.
A little chuckle.
A little laugh. Yeah.
Chuckle. He was like, yes, sir. Yeah. So, but yeah, man, like he's
that's
unbelievable.
Awesome.
He's out there getting shots before anyone today in the weight room early. Like he's a worker, ultimate professional. In there watching film, making sure every guy knows who. Since we're playing Indiana tonight, like every guy knows who is who. I know I've talked a lot about LeBron and obviously him being my favorite player, but he just brings the. He opens up my eyes to so many new things every single time I'm around him.
Yeah. Yeah, that's amazing. I love those little like anecdotes when you say that. But AD is also – Schroeder said and I think it was an interview either today or yesterday. It's like he's –
Today, yeah.
Yeah, he's been the best player in the world for the last, like, 2 weeks. It's probably just true. Like, he's averaging, I don't know, what, 30 and 17? The rebounding numbers are crazy.
Yeah, I think one thing about AD that people forget about is he's been dealing with such a tough stretch of injuries these past couple of years that he hasn't been able to come like work out a whole entire summer. So he worked out this whole entire summer. But you got to think about it. He's still rehabbing these injuries.
Yeah.
So he's like, there's a, you know this as a basketball player. There's in shape and there's game in shape.
Game shape, yeah.
So he's working himself into game shape, and now he's hit a point in the season where he's like, all right, like now I'm in shape. Now I feel good. I've got my rhythm. I've done all these things.
Yeah.
I'm putting the work. I'm getting into my schedule every single day. So now he's just like the level he's been playing at has been unbelievable. And then I mean that's obviously he's hit his peak. Our team's gotten better. We have Dennis and Thomas back. There's a lot of different factors for why we're winning, but he's got to be the number one reason why.
Yeah,
kind of won 5 out of the last 6.
Yeah, you could tell he's not holding anything back at all now. You know what I mean? Like, he's just fully healthy.
Yeah, which, it looks great. It looks great.
Shockingly, that helps. Yeah. You're able to just, be healthy.
Having a top 5 player in the world healthy is definitely definitely good. Good for the franchise.
Yeah. Yeah, the last, 7 games. These are his rebounding numbers. 14, 18, 16, 18, 21, 15.
That's not bad.
It's not bad at all. 24, 37, 38, 30, 37, 25. Those were his points numbers. That's insane.
Yeah.
And like you said, 5-6? Yeah. So.
I mean, obviously, like him not playing last game and us winning is a good indicator as well.
It's a good sign.
The team's getting better. We're able to win a game with him and LeBron. Like, him and LeBron only play one game together, but, like, we're able to win a game with one of those guys sitting. Like, there's going to be points in the season where we're going to have to win those games when those guys are sitting or those guys need a rest day. These guys have a nagging injury. It's like, all right, like, we have 3 days off after this game. Like if I can sit this game, that's 4 days off, and I'm able to – you know what I mean? So,
yeah.
And obviously with the whole Pat Bev situation too, it was great to kind of have a streak of wins without a starter.
Yeah, definitely. That was I don't know if you want to talk about that, but Pat Bev doing that was sweet.
Well, I just think Pat Bev is such an ultimate team guy.
Yeah.
I mean, and seeing – I'm not trying to talk bad on any NBA players, but just seeing Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton, like, stepping over my guy, Austin Reeves.
Who, yeah.
Friend of the podcast.
Yeah, our guy.
Our guy.
Austin Reeves.
Like, our guy, Austin Reeves.
Yeah.
It was just like – it felt like such a coward move.
Yeah.
And I talked to Pat today. He was like, I'm not going to let that slide.
Yeah.
So just ultimate competitor. Pat's in the freaking – in the so he's not playing right now. So he's in the pregame. Like, the guys who aren't scheduled to play. In the NBA, there's a schedule of minutes of guys who are supposed to play, what's gonna happen in the game. They know when they're – usually when they're getting checked in the first quarter. So, Pat's in the play group today for the guys who aren't scheduled to play. Not meaning that they're not going to play, it's just they're not scheduled to play.
Yeah.
Pat's in the play group today causing a havoc.
Really?
Just diving on the floor, talking crap. Making sure everyone knows his presence is felt. Which is the most Pat Bev thing that I can think of.
Yeah, that's why he's there. But I think the best part of the video is, like, he pushes Ayton, and then he's standing there. Like, you could tell in scenarios when guys, like, want to fight and when they're kind of just, like, I don't know. Like, when Doug Eater just, like, sprints away, like, he clearly didn't want to fight. But Pat Bev was, like, he was, like, come on. Like, if any of you try and fight me, like, I'm really, really, really about it. So that was, like, the best part. But
I think the best quote of the season right now is, like, I'm a foxhole guy.
Yeah. Like, I mean, he is. Guy. Yeah, he 100% is.
Really, really excited for this week's guest, my man Devin Kennedy. So, welcome, Devin. Welcome to the Sweater Show.
Appreciate you, man. I've been hearing good things, so I'm excited to join.
Obviously, Devin has his own podcast called the Run Your Own Race Podcast. Very, very popular podcast. Definitely up on the rise, along with the Sweater Show. So first of all, I mean, Patty just asked us off air, what kind of made you get into the podcast game?
You know, for me, the last year when I went through my injury, I was more open to kind of like sharing my story. I did a small little docu-series on YouTube. Obviously, Run Your Own Race. It's kind of like my motto, my mindset coming into being a pro. And I think it gave me a lot of peace, really just kind of diving in on my story, the highs and the lows. And so my manager and I basically were just like, we found a lot of success and peace sharing our stories. How cool would it be, obviously, to hear from other people across different industries, sports, business, you know, the whole nine, regardless what the sport was, and hear how kind of they run their own race, and just hearing those stories to inspire and motivate. And that's really kind of what I'm here to do, I feel like. It's one of my driving forces is, you know, someone who wasn't supposed to be here, literally in the NBA or at this level, who continues to climb and to fight. And I just want to hear the stories from other people. So hopefully maybe we'll be hearing about the Cole Swider story here soon.
Yeah, no, for sure, man. Like, I've obviously been around you for, a month now, a month and a half. Yeah. And just being around you, your presence every single day, you can just see, like, the you've been battle-tested. You're running your own race. You're not afraid to miss shots. You're not afraid to make six in a row. You know what I mean? Like, like one of those things is just, like, just the everyday grind. I mean, I've just really been appreciative to kind of see you go through it. And obviously, I mean, being two of the best shooters in the world.
I hear you.
I can say that confidently, Patty.
I agree.
Being two of the best shooters in the world.
Two burners.
Two burners. It's just one of those things where it's like, you know what I mean, you go through it, and running your own race is truly a perfect perfect motto for a podcast.
For real, yeah.
Real quick, I got to out myself here. I was about 2-3 minutes late. That's unlike me, Swider, for the podcast game. Maybe in other games. But we are doing a home-and-home here. At least that's the plan, where Devin comes on our podcast, Swider goes on his podcast. So, Devin, if you want to give a quick plug to where they could find the Run Your Own Race podcast, when Swider comes on your podcast, you could do the same for us.
I like that subtle plug there. I like that subtle plug. We've got our full season one already booked, but we'll get Cole on to season two.
Oh, no way.
No, but yeah, the Run Your Own Race podcast, primarily on YouTube. That's where the video format's at. And then most of your streaming platforms, Spotify, Apple, your regular podcast apps. And yeah, that's the Run Your Own Race podcast. I actually came up with the motto. I mean, you've heard Run Your Own Race. You know, people say that kind of in passing or talking about just like, you know, owning your own journey. But when I went undrafted on draft night 2019, and then got a call from my agent to go to Summer League with the Thunder, I mean, there was a lot of mixed emotions. I was thinking I could have fallen to Brooklyn at 58. But obviously went undrafted and basically was like, look, I'm excited for this opportunity, and put a hashtag run your own race. And it kind of just like came to me in that moment.
It's
been really the driving force, you know, the motto that I go by. I've started my own company, and part of the podcast is just kind of getting into the media game. My big vision is to eventually have my own media company where we can start actually sharing these stories at a high level. Via documentaries, docuseries, short stories, and, you know, possibly selling those off to some bigger companies. But right now, just getting into that media space via the podcast, I think, it, like you said, it's telling. I mean, in these stories, there's so many people who have unique stories. You see them at the top. I mean, when Cole's out here hitting game winners and, you know, breaking three-point records for the Lakers, they're going to see him there, but they won't know that story and all it took, you know, the injury his rookie year, you know, so...
100%.
That's what the story is about. And so, yeah, when we have Cole on in season two, when we're in person doing the interviews,
perfect.
We'll plug the pod.
Yeah, hell yeah, for sure.
I love it. Yeah, if you get through, if you get a podcast network on that brand, then, you know, maybe we could strike a deal in the future.
It's a high-paying deal, though, kids.
There we go.
Yep.
They can't
lowball. Yeah, our price is high. Our price is real high.
But, yeah, man, obviously – I'm super excited to have you on the podcast. But just getting going, like, just talk about your early basketball life. What made you fall in love with the game? Did you have a parent that kind of influenced you to play the game? And what kind of sparked that love?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up playing basically all sport. I'm from a small town in Indiana. I was the first born in my family. My mom was an elite swimmer in high school. She was athletic. My dad... my parents had me when he was a sophomore in college. And he went to a small kind of like Catholic Christian college where if you weren't married and had a child out of wedlock, you actually get expelled. Wow. And so he got kicked out of school, basically, you know, having me. My mom had me at a pretty young age. And so they pretty much put all their energy into me. And the best way they probably knew how was through sports. My dad was 24 at the time. So if you can think about it, like, having a kid at this time,
yeah, it's one of us.
If I had a two-year-old child, like, they're going to be around basketball and what I love. And so that was really it. He was playing 3-on-3 tournaments, outdoors. He'd be at the men's leagues, and I was just around the game. And I played multiple sports. I played quarterback 4 years through high school, and loved it. But there was nothing like that love for basketball and the love that my dad and I shared. So that's really what got me into basketball.
So being from Indiana, it's pretty well documented how big of a basketball state that is, and kind of the culture that's definitely pretty prevalent there. So were you real influenced by that? And maybe for listeners who, it seems like it's one of those things where it's like, if you don't know, you just don't know. So do you have a story or guys that you looked up to from the area, and kind of like, how much does it mean to you to be another guy that kids from Indiana can now look at, where it's such a high basketball pedigree, and now they're looking at you and kind of almost like looking at you as like a blueprint to get to where you are now?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, I think if anyone's a basketball fan, you watch Space Jam, you watch Coach Carter, and if you haven't seen the movie Hoosiers, you should. It's a classic. And I actually, growing up in Indiana playing Indiana high school basketball, I didn't watch Hoosiers until my senior year of high school.
Wow.
Which is just something crazy. But it really was like, growing up in Indiana, everywhere you drive, and most of the time you're like passing through small towns, cornfields, but like there's a hoop almost at every house, like every single house. And I don't know if that's common everywhere, but in Indiana, it's different. I've seen high school arenas in Indiana that host 10,000 people, and they'll sell out on Friday nights against like the crosstown rival. Whereas in college, I don't think any home game at Princeton had more than 4,000 fans. So, like, I came from a place where a Friday night in a small town, you can pack it out, and that's there's nothing like it. And to your point, kind of being someone who would I look up to, I remember being at these tournaments. It's called Spieth Fieldhouse in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And, I mean, there's 8 courts, and on the main court, there was an Indy Spieth team of Greg Oden, Mike Conley, Daquan Cook, all from the same high school, playing on the same AU team. I remember being like 8, 9, 10 years old and looking at these dudes throwing lobs, dunking. I'm like, man, I would love to play for that team. And like, I ended up playing for Spieth. Still was not really recruited heavily. No one really looked at me like, yo, they've got Devin Kennedy. It was just like, all right, this little shooter out here, probably go mid-major and whatever. But I mean, to think now that I'm one of those guys that's touched the NBA, that's obviously still fighting to get back into the NBA, and kind of go down as one of those people in Indiana to make it to the league, is pretty special.
Real quick, if you put Jimmy Chitwood in a 2021-22 basketball game, what do you think his stats look like?
Jimmy Chitwood? I mean, whatever.
That's the guy. Whatever,
whatever Buddy Boeheim's doing is what Jimmy would do. So there's a little Buddy Boeheim shout out.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, obviously, Indiana high school basketball just seems to me like it's like Texas high school football. You know what I mean? It's one of those things where you just as a basketball fan, obviously watching Hoosiers and everything like that. But kind of going into that, what made you choose your high school? Obviously, Indiana, you probably could have gone to a bunch of different type of high schools, and I don't even know if La Lumiere was a big program at the time, but yeah, just kind of go into what made you choose your high school.
No, I think for me, I mean, it was actually kind of controversial at the time. I mean, I went to public school my whole K through 8.
Yep.
I was going to basically do what everyone in the public system does and go to the public high school, Mishawaka High School. But at the time, it was like a voucher program where if you're like under a certain guideline for, finances with your family, you can pretty much choose any school in the area. And for me, it wasn't anything to do with basketball particularly. It was like my parents constantly hammering home education and obviously graduating. My parents didn't graduate from college for one reason or another. And so they were like, I want to put you on the best path possible to obviously play athletics, but get a good education. And that's when I went to basically the private school, Marion High School, which at the time had a star in the state. I don't know if you guys know, Demetrius Jackson, who had a great career at Notre Dame and then got drafted by Boston Celtics.
He's nice.
I mean, so
he's a Sixers guy for a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. So Demetrius and I basically played at Marion for 2 years together, had a really good run. Obviously, he got drafted But yeah, I mean, it was really kind of an education thing, but Marion, we ended up putting Marion on the map, and they've pretty much been a dynasty ever since.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
Go ahead. So, I mean, you're mentioning education being a big thing in your life and kind of like basing a lot of decisions for your high school on that, and then you end up going to Princeton, which, I mean, if you're making education a priority in life, it doesn't get much better than Princeton. So I guess just to sort of not fast forward through the rest of your high school career, but I guess sort of, you know, how much did that mean to you if you're looking at basketball as a vehicle to get somewhere that's a real high education, you could get a good degree, you end up in the Ivy League, you end up at Princeton. How much did that mean to you when you kind of received that offer and ultimately end up going there?
Well, I can kind of sum up my high school career with the Princeton decision. And, you know, I played, like I said, football all 4 years. I had offers to go to Air Force, Navy for football, option quarterback. And at the time, like my junior year, I was considering it because I really wasn't getting heavily recruited in basketball. And then junior year going into senior year, I wouldn't say I blew up, but every mid-major school basically offered, but no high majors pulled the trigger. It was the classic, like, you're not a true point guard and you're too small to be a two guard. Yeah. But it's like, in my mind, I was like, well, I'm killing everyone who's supposed to be your traditional point guard, and I'm killing everyone who's supposed to be your traditional two guard, so what do I have to do? I mean, I wanted to go to Notre Dame. Obviously, it was close to home. Demetrius was there. Any in-state school, Purdue, Butler, Indiana really didn't recruit me heavily. And then Michigan was interested. But the day they wanted me to go to elite camp was the same day as the SAT. And Princeton had been in the mix. And so to your point about education, I'm like, man, let's say I do go to Michigan. I get an offer. What do I do? Come off the bench for 2 years and then play maybe? Like with transfers, like I don't know. Like let me just get this SAT. Either my score is going to be good enough or they're not. And they were good enough. So it really came down to, okay, I still have this ultimate goal of playing in the NBA. And it wasn't necessarily an education decision, but it was like, if I'm not going high major and I'm probably going to stay 4 years somewhere, I might as well go to Princeton and and take on that challenge academically as well as whatever it's going to entail to pursue my dream. And so that's really how Princeton became like the top decision for me.
So going back to that recruiting process, obviously we've talked before, and you said basically you chose between Ohio and Princeton.
Yeah.
Talk about the basketball aspect of that decision, and maybe what each coach envisioned you as positionally. Because obviously in the league now you're a combo, but I would say you're an elite shooter, elite floor spacer. A person.
Say that again.
Elite floor spacer. Scottie Pippen.
There we go.
But yeah, that's what you're known as. You're known as more of like a Patty Mills guy instead of a Kyrie, a traditional point guard.
Yeah.
So kind of talk about that decision from the basketball standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, the crazy thing is, like, in high school, I was more a traditional combo because I would bring the ball up. I could be a decision maker. I'd be a playmaker. And I could score on the ball. I could score off the ball. I'm basically between Ohio University, Saul Phillips, Jason Kemp, were like family to me during the recruiting process. It wasn't, obviously, like coming from Indiana, you're not trying to go to Ohio, you know, like the Bob. I didn't know what Ohio Bobcats were at the time, and then they obviously recruited me. I went on a visit, and basketball wise was like, you're coming in as a freshman and we're basically giving you the keys. We have like an elite big, some good wings, but as a freshman we're throwing you in the fire. You're gonna be in pick and rolls left and right, ISO situations. They're like, we want you to average 20 and 10, like, as a freshman. Like, we see you having that trajectory all 4 years, get you to the league, hopefully in three. So it's kind of like a CJ McCollum type situation at Ohio, which was tempting. And it's like, man, like, is this what I want? Like, do I just want to go all in on basketball and make that the primary decision? Whereas Princeton, I go on the visit, and they're talking about what presidents went here, what basketball alums made it to the NBA and also are the president of the Knicks and in the front office of this NBA team who had good careers but more so had to basically play in the Princeton style offense and find their way. And the long-term vision outweighed the 3 year you're getting the ball in your hands decision. So that's where Princeton obviously ended up being the final factor, was the long-term view. But you had to make some sacrifices in basketball. And that's really when me passing, getting off the ball, spacing the floor, really making the right reads, obviously being an elite shooter, being extremely efficient, was going to be my calling card. And that's kind of been the mold that I've taken to get to the NBA. And obviously being close to sticking and now trying to claw back is okay. Let's clean up some of the things that may be weaknesses, defense, being a primary ball handler, but obviously keeping your main skill the main skill through the highs and lows, which clearly has happened. So,
yeah, I mean, first of all, that's an incredibly matured like way of thinking about a college decision. I feel like not many kids would opt for that with the Ohio decision.
That's 17 years
like
old.
Like being a basketball. Yeah, exactly.
And the best thing is like having a strong support system. Again, both my parents didn't graduate college, so for them also is like, look, if you believe in yourself, like you can make it anywhere. And like, mm-hmm. how would you feel if you could go to either school and make it to the NBA? And it's like, damn, like if I can make it to the NBA, the Princeton route, I would probably be more fulfilled. So obviously I didn't know if it would happen or not, and clearly it's worked out in my favor up to this mm-hmm. point. But yeah, definitely needed a strong support system to help make that decision.
Talk about the adjustment of college. Obviously you're not only going to playing Division I basketball, and Princeton is known for playing a hard non-conference schedule. Starting off, you're playing as a freshman, to obviously now you're having to balance both the academic prowess of Princeton and the basketball, where you guys play at a high level, and it's a system you have to learn too.
Yeah.
Talk about the adjustment to college basketball, because I know for me it was the biggest adjustment of my life.
Yeah. Nah, dude. The freshman fall was like, it was like do or die, and obviously take basketball out of the equation. You're taking your classes, your history, sociology, econ, politics, to kind of figure out what you want to pursue as a major. And I mean, I'm gonna be honest, history I got a D, econ I got a C minus, politics was a B, social was an A plus. I mean, social was E, and I ended up being a social major, but at the time you're getting a D plus, a C minus, your classmates are talking about how easy the courses are. And I'm calling home like, yo, transfer portal, I'm looking at Georgetown. I'm literally talking to my AAU coach, like, what school can we go to and sit out and have a career? Like, that was the mindset. And that had nothing to do with the other side of the coin, which was the basketball side. And it's basketball. Like, I'm coming in trying to kind of get in my bag, and they're stopping practice, blowing the whistle, like, no, you pass and you fucking cut. Like, you space and you stop trying to get towards the ball. And so, I mean, I remember my coach, like, getting into me, where it was like, Devin thinks he's a prima donna, he thinks he's the chosen one, he thinks he's coming here to save the city. I'm like, well, that's what you said I should do. Like, you recruited me to do this. But it's a rude awakening on both sides of the coin. I mean, I'm glad I had really a strong support cast from my seniors on that team to really guide me and take me under the wing and be like, look, part of Princeton is like, you can't be successful on the court if you're not successful in the classroom. Like, if you have to go to tutors and get work done up till 2 a.m. And that's what it ended up being, like, literally my whole career. Like, you had to really make sacrifices to get the schoolwork done. Even if, and they say C's get degrees, so, like, just get it done, you know, do the work. And, you know, I ended up being successful later on on the academic side. But that was definitely the biggest transition. And then once you kind of take care of that, the basketball stuff will start figuring it out. You find confidence as a freshman, a game winner. I mean, we ended up being close to making it to the tournament, ended up playing the NIT. But yeah, I mean, that adjustment, I wanted to leave for sure after the first semester, but I thugged it out. We got the degree, and I mean, definitely wasn't easy.
I mean, hey man, that's a Princeton C or a Princeton D plus. That's not like your average D plus, you know what I mean?
It's like A minus.
It's like you said, D plus.
Yeah.
But, one thing, when me and Swat were preparing, we actually already taped the first like half hour of the show. And one thing we talked about was, college basketball, you look around recent weeks, there's been a lot of, like, upsets, people call them, where an Ivy League school or, like, Portland is one that we mentioned. I mean, we won't bring up Patriot League and Bryant beating Cuse, but...
Wow. Yeah, we can cut that.
As someone who played at that level, how much more do those games mean to you guys going into there and... I mean, I think it was your junior year, senior year, you guys beat Arizona State. You're the leading scorer in that game. Like, do you go into that game with the chip on your shoulder because you're like, listen, you guys could have recruited me. I'm as good or better than anyone else on the court. So what's kind of the mindset of the lower, not, I guess the lower, the mid-major school going into the, like a high-major arena and playing them?
Yeah, no, being the mid-major, I mean, you have, there's no pressure on you. You're supposed to lose, right? And so for me, I feel like my teammates, I mean, we can go back to my sophomore year in the tournament, going into the tournament on a 17-game winning streak, being the classic 12 seed, and for me, going up against Notre Dame, school that I wanted to go to. Like, for me, that, I let the moment get too big. I basically laid an egg that game. Like, I was so nervous, jittery, I had anxiety. I'm looking on the sideline, I'm like, that coach didn't recruit me, I'm better than him, And I mean, that was one of my worst games. I think I went into it like, I'm going to be Steph Curry and hit 10 threes in the tournament, knock out the team that I was supposed to go, you know. And so there's that side of the coin where you kind of come in with that mentality that, man, I should have been recruited, and you kind of let the moment get too big. But at the same time, against like Arizona State, that team my senior year, you know, was special in that, like, we knew we were good, and we didn't look at ourselves as we're the underdog. We just came in and said, no one can hang with us, except for Duke, who beat us by 50 literally a week before that.
I was gonna bring that up, man.
But yeah, I mean, being the mid-major team going into those schools, like, the environments are amazing. It's not like our home games at Princeton. They mean a lot, and obviously to get a win just means a lot for the league, more so than even your own self.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure, man. Obviously, you have a great career at Princeton. Kind of talk about, like, that evolution you took from your freshman year to sophomore year, that sophomore year to junior year. Like, what was that? What was the biggest jump that you saw in yourself, and what was the skill that you saw yourself mastering within your Princeton college career?
Yeah, I think every year I definitely matured, and I think throughout college, you find yourself maturing physically. The game gets slower. You know, I think as a freshman, you know, when you're playing like the Marylands, the Mellow Trimbles of the world, like, who was an elite point guard. I mean, you look at these guys like, man, like, will I ever get to that level where the game is just so easy? But each year, I think, like you said, physically is one thing in the off season, just committing to your body, and then having that year of experience or 2 years of experience and applying it. In the Princeton offense, there's not much creativity you can do, but like, I would find myself, if we're in transition and I'm 3, 4, 5 feet off the line and I have a shot, like, I'm confidently taking it because you start gaining a rapport with your coaches and your team. So I'd say my game just started expanding a little bit. Obviously just knew the system better, and kind of bought more so into the team style of play. And in college, I think, regardless where you're at, like, once you really buy into the team, the system, and kind of put winning above yourself, that's when you actually find more success as an individual.
For sure. That was I mean, I went to Villanova for 3 years, and that's what was communicated to us all the time. It was like, like, you guys are going to be in our system, you're going to jump stop, you're going to do all these things. And I think what made the great players great there is that they were able to do those things, they were able to master those things, and then they were able to play off of those skills. And then once they got to the NBA, they were able to adjust. Sadiq Bey, Mikal Bridges, Jalen Brunson, like, all these guys were able to, Josh Hart, were able to have these skills, do everything you need to do to play at Villanova, defend, switch 1 through 5, and then go to the NBA and totally reinvent your game again.
Yeah.
So I have total empathy for seeing you guys play. You know what I mean? Seeing how, just because we play Penn every single year, and it's kind of not similar to you guys. I mean, they ran it through AJ Brodeur when I was there.
Yeah.
But
nice. I used to see him at an on-campus bar all the time. Where I played undergrad was connected to Penn's campus.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
Yeah, man. So
no, but go on.
We had some good rivalries with those guys. Oh, so.
I know all those guys. Not personally, but it's the same type of thing. I didn't get recruited by them, so I followed them pretty closely. But to that point that you guys were just talking about, how hard is it when now you graduate from Princeton, Swider, you said you go from Villanova. How hard is it for you individually? All those guys had success before you, but did you kind of struggle with, because now your NBA skill, both of you guys, it's shooting, and Devin, you're playing the one, and you had the ball a lot. Swider, I mean, you were, like, doing more within your game last year at Syracuse than, like, your NBA skill is shooting. So was it kind of hard to go back into that mindset of, now your role is sort of changing again, and you're preparing for the NBA, and like you go from, you know, the best player on your team, and now it's like I have to, I don't know, like change my workouts, kind of change my mindset back to maybe something that was before your college system?
So I think Cole hit it on the head with a couple of those Villanova guys. It's like, how did you take what you had to learn and buy into to have team success at the college level, and now you're not really buying into necessarily the team concept when you're really trying to get paid. You're trying to get paid, you're trying to get to the next job, you're trying to get obviously money for your family. At the end of the day, like, that's what everyone here is doing, their own individual journey, and then you bring guys from all walks of life together, and once you're here, it's like, okay, what do we have to do now as this unit of 10 random people from different backgrounds, situations, and when? And we actually had a team meeting, what was it, in Santa Cruz?
Santa Cruz,
where it was like, we were on a 3-game losing streak, and it's like, yo, let's just sit down as a group, and let's talk about where we're all coming from, what year we're in. We have myself, who's in year 4. We have a guy who's in year 6. We have a bunch of rookies. And everyone's trying to obviously make it to the NBA. I mean, you're not in the G League just to be like, man, like, I'm excited to just be here, right? But, like, it's kind of going a roundabout to answer your question. But as you as you go from college to the pros, you have to figure out why are you playing? What do you want to get out of basketball? And how are you going to do it? And I think for us, the how is being elite floor spacers, knocking down the ball, you know, taking and making tough shots, but also, you know, like, knowing when to get off it in space and, you know, help your team win. So for me, my rookie year, I played 40 games in the G League with Long Island after being with Brooklyn for like 3 days at training camp. And it took me 35 games to figure it out. Like, literally, I'm like, do I need to be a point guard? Turning the ball over. I couldn't defend a lick at all for the first 35 games. I can guard a little bit better, but still, it's you know, it's a challenge. But at the end of the day, it was like the last 5 games before the COVID kind of pandemic, I figured it out. And I knew when to make plays inside the 3-point line. I knew when to, you know, just get off it. And I knew when to, you know, take and make shots. And so for me, it was like, wow, that's what's going to get me to the NBA. Doing a bunch of other stuff is cool, and maybe I'll score in the G League 18 to 20. But that's going to be my cap, and I'll see myself overseas really soon, maybe with a good job. But I ultimately wouldn't reach the NBA trying to do a bunch of stuff that I'm not supposed to do in the NBA. And it took that whole COVID, you know, time where I actually wasn't able to play or even get 5-on-5 to anything to kind of just mentally prepare myself for what it's going to take for me to make it to the league. And thank God it did, and thank God, like, I bought into that role, and I got called up. Granted, it was after winning a championship and a finals MVP, but it was like my least scoring season. I averaged 11 and a half or something in the bubble, but I'm pretty sure I showcased being a floor spacer, making the right plays. And it wasn't sexy, it wasn't appealing, it wasn't flashy, but it's like I can put that guy on the floor with Marco Fultz and Vucevic, and he'll space the floor and make the right play.
One of the things that I think is another one of your NBA skills is your leadership. You know what I mean? You talk about making winning MVP and winning a G League and winning the championship in the bubble. Where did you kind of make that adjustment in your head of like, all right, like I'm a young guy, but I can still be a leader in my own right. And while being a leader, I'm going to go up to this NBA team and be myself and be comfortable with myself and know my role, but at the same time, be confident in my role. Because I think that's something that a lot of players struggle with, right? Is that they're on the G League team, they're doing one thing. They go to the NBA team, they're doing another thing. Was it as simple as that? Is that your role didn't change, or was it a lot of growth and maturity over the years?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think for me, it's like a blessing and a curse. You know, my second year, I go to training camp with Orlando. I have a great training camp. They had all 15 roster spots in both two ways already locked up. So I pretty much went in really hoping I could steal someone's job, but knowing that more than likely I was going to get waived and go to the G League. But I remember when I had that exit interview with the front office and the head coach, and they were like, kind of talking about the intangibles, like, you know, you obviously we know you can shoot the ball. We know you play with good energy. You have, you know, use your voice, but it's just like your ability to communicate and lead and know when to take a back seat, but still kind of like lift the team up, you know, you know, from the bottom pretty much, is like, that's invaluable. And like, you need 15 men on the roster to be like that. I'm like, well, then why am I not the 15th man? Why am I going to the gym? But it's just knowing that, okay, like, there is something that doesn't show up in a box score that these teams are evaluating and looking for. And so it's like, man, if I can be that, and that's kind of who I am naturally, just own that. Regardless who's on the team, regardless your role, if you're playing or not, like, bring that energy, because positive energy is really contagious, and that can actually attribute to winning in the smallest of ways. So, I mean, it's always a transition. Even now, it was like, I was with Orlando/Lakeland for the majority of my career, and then last day of training camp, getting waived, and it was kind of like that final goodbye. It was like, damn, I gave it my all, and I didn't really get necessarily like a fair shake at really getting NBA minutes, but it was like, that is who I am, and there's 30 teams out here. It could be Orlando on the back end. It could be another team, but it's like, I got to keep owning who I am. And just to be like really just real, like, I come in, Cole's like my shooter, and for 6 games I have the worst shooting slump in the history of my career. Like, I haven't shot this poorly, but it was like, all right, next one's going in. I'm gonna still be positive. I'm trying to impact winning with my voice, my leadership on defense. And it's like, that stuff will actually carry you further than making or missing shots, because you can't really control that.
So obviously you talked about your first year in Brooklyn a little bit, and then I mean, you kind of skipped ahead. It's all good. It's all good. But
he's a podcaster, Swatter. He's covering it all.
Exactly where we're going.
Yep.
Where we're going.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly where we're going. But talk about the emotional side, because I think a lot of times people forget. We talked about earlier, run your own race, like the story. But talk about the emotional side, because me and you talked about how you thought you found a home on Orlando. You thought you found this next place where you were able to kind of take this next step in your career. Talk about the emotional side, and talk about what, can you just tell us the story of what happened, if it's not too much, because you were it seemed like bound to make that team.
And then
you come here in South Bay, and when I first meet him, Patty, it's like nothing ever happened. He comes in with the greatest attitude in the world, and then he kind of, in our team meeting, he talks about how hard it's been for him. So if you can talk about this.
I'm not gonna try and cry on national television, man. I'm not trying to cry on the radio.
This is national TV.
The Cole Swider show. With Run Your Own Race. But at the end of the day, man, like, yeah, it was a really tough situation. And I think, you know, for me, so I mean, yeah, just full transparency, I'm going into the last preseason game in Orlando. It's against the Cavs. It's October 14th. You know, you have to, rosters are due on the 17th. And I'm shooting 60% from the three-point line. Like, I'm getting the scrub minutes at the end of the game. And I mean, kind of Scotty talked about what's it like being the 16, 17 guy, you know, fringe 15. And they're playing the main roster. Let's say you're down 20, whatever. And they throw the last unit in with 5 minutes. Like, how do you really make a mark? And I've pretty much made a 13 game career out of scrub minutes, you know, and being efficient, effective, and be like, damn, we can count on him, even in the meaningless minutes, excuse me. So I'm at camp and I'm having a great camp, not getting much opportunity. Last game comes and I'm having my last pregame nap, getting my mind ready, expecting starters maybe to play limited minutes, and this is your opportunity. And I get woken up from a call from my agent, and he's like, hey, you know, how's everything, like, trying to play. I'm like, it's good, I'm literally sleeping. He's like, okay, well, can you kind of wake up like real quick? I'm like, what's going on, man? I'm hoping. He's like, dude, you're gonna make the roster. I wanted to go in with a sigh of relief. It was not that call. He was like, look, you know, they're not making any trades, they're not waiving anybody, the roster's pretty much set, they're gonna waive you after the game. And I'm like, dude, like, can't they just waive me now and like not have me go to the
gym? Yeah, I was gonna say, like, playing the game
and see everyone, like you said, coming in with like a smile on your face. Like, I had to really present this version of myself that nothing's happening, like, I'm coming here to get a job, to keep my job, and knowing the whole time I'm about to get fired afterwards. So I think that mindset pretty much transferred through my first month here in South Bay, like, kind of this haziness of like, wow, this is the reality. Like, I gave my heart, my soul, everything. I mean, you talk about emotionally, but like financially, you're a non-guaranteed guy on April 10th at the end of the season, and they expect you to be in market training, having an NBA body, like nutrition-wise. And I basically bought an apartment for me, my fiance. We're living in Orlando. This is every dime out of my pocket. Nothing guaranteed. Like, I could get waived at any moment. But like, they're not providing house. This is just part of being like 451. Like almost in, but not quite in. And I mean, I just I treated the whole summer as if I was on the team. I'm making the team. They're gonna have to make a tough decision, and ultimately they went, I think, with actually what was probably easiest, with like, this is the roster we have. Devin probably deserved the spot, but not enough to cut someone, pay them a couple millions of dollars. Like, not that he didn't earn it enough, right? Like, and that's really what it was. And so it was just tough to deal with. And it's like, you have to change and move on. I had deals overseas in the high six figures. Like, I'm like, am I ready to make that jump? I'm like, I was right there. You know, I'm gonna come back to the G League where I found success, and hopefully one of the other 29 teams sees the value in what I bring. And you know, but that's so you never know what that next step's gonna look like. So, I mean, it was brutal. I mean, it was like actually like really dark that first week, and had a tough time adjusting here in South Bay, and still figuring it out. Like, what's my identity? How to be myself on a new team, new system, new guys. But that's the business, and you gotta have a short memory and keep going, especially as shooters, you know.
Yeah,
so
yeah, going off of that, going, it's actually a great segue into the next part of the episode. But obviously, like, I'm just very blessed and thankful to have you, just kind of be like an older presence, a vet, and everything like that. But obviously, we share, like Patty said, we share a skill of shooting. Talk about, obviously, you're unbelievable moving off the ball. You've shown me a lot of times, just me being 6'9", you being 6'1",
6'2". There we go. 6'2". There we go. We don't play barefoot.
We don't play barefoot, yeah. So,
I love that. I've never heard anyone say that.
This dude loves perfect. Talking about height.
I'm stealing that. Yeah.
Like, you're 6'9". What are you doing talking about height, bro? If I'm 6'2", let me rock. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah. Obviously, our games aren't exactly the same, but we pride ourselves on being on similar things. So, kind of talk about the art of shooting. What gets you going? Why you love it? And just how you can be effective in the game as a shooter, because you talk about being an elite floor spacer.
Yeah, man. Well, I might have to bounce the question back to you and hear your thoughts. I mean, I'm always trying to
get... Yeah, you go first, Wider.
Yeah, dude, let's hear from your perspective. Yeah. Coming into the league, you know, I haven't really actually seen you play, and I'm excited to get this guy back on the floor. And I told him, I said, I don't expect you to be in the G League long. Yeah. Get healthy, come down here, get a rhythm, and go knock down shots up top. Like, that's what I see for you. And like, as a player who obviously is wants to be back in the NBA, like, having someone on a two-way younger than you shooter, like, you could be salty and you could be like, man, like, I deserve a spot, dude. Like, that's not how I'm built. People are built like that, but that's not me. 100%. So like, I want to give as much knowledge as I can, take as much knowledge from you. We work on things, and like, seeing everyone be successful, like, that's bare minimum. Like, for me, like, seeing other guys and helping them in their journeys, like, as they run their own race. Talk to me just a little bit from your perspective, and I'll give you some.
Swatter, hold on, Swatter, before you answer that, I don't know if we could have this guy on again.
Yeah, I know.
He's better at this than we are. Yeah.
He's too good. He's better than
us. Yeah. No, but go ahead.
Well, I think for me, just being a shooter, it entails a lot. You know what I mean? I think one of the things that they're always going to peg us is being as bad defenders. You know what I mean? Just being a shooter. Even though I am 6'9", I've gotten better laterally, I've done all these things, like, they're going to peg you as that being one of your weaknesses. So I think being able to get open shots, being able to move, being good enough defensively that they can't take you off the floor being defensive. But for me, the art of shooting is something I love. Like, just the everyday preparation. Like, one thing I try and tell people is, like, you can't be a good shooter if you don't work hard. And that's like a lot of God-given things are given to people. Like, I'm not 7'1" with a long.
No, you're 6'9".
I'm 6'9", but I'm not 7'1".
Really? You don't have God-given height? That's what we're saying now, Swatter?
What'd you say?
You don't have God-given height? We're saying that?
Yeah, he's like, I'm not 7'1". Yeah. Yo, you're 6'9", bro.
Okay.
If I'm 6'5", it's a different story right now.
So. Okay. No, for sure. But I think one thing, like, when you see a good shooter, you know he's putting the work. He's putting the time.
That's true. That's very true.
And
yep.
And I think just how the evolution of basketball has gone, it just makes guys like me and you even more valuable. The sets, the actions, the I'm a basketball junkie. I'm watching JJ Redick highlights at 2 a.m. I'm watching I'm watching freaking Kyle Korver highlights. I'm watching all these guys, and it just gets me going. It gets my blood going. So yeah, I mean, that's the art of shooting. It's an art to me. It's an art form. Like, basketball's an art form, but for me, shooting, like, if you, I can watch someone take 10 shots and know if they're a good shooter or not.
Mm-hmm. That's love. No, dude, I keep, and I mess with him a lot. He comes in with his venti iced coffee.
No cream, no sugar.
AAU dad, man. Like,
like
a lot of those AAU dads who come in, like, they're hyper focused in the craft, like, whether it's their kid or whatever. And they're, you know, and he, I'm on the plane with him, and he's going on the NBA League Pass, and it's Raptors game, and I go over and look at someone else, and next thing you know, it's a Sixers game, and he's just like, dude, I love this shit. He's like, I love this shit. I'm like, dude, you're gonna make it, bro. Like, so I guess to that point, like, for me, I think it was middle school. I'm sitting in, like, choir class, and it's March Madness, and Davidson is playing Duke, and it's Steph Curry, and there's, like, I've always been a good shooter, and I love the game. Like I said, I played multiple sports. It was watching Steph Curry be a guy that pretty much looked like me, scrawny, light-skinned, small, but just flows, and he's just playing. He's just letting it fly, and he's playing with such ease. It's like kind of like the Bruce Lee "be like water" kind of mantra, and it's like, dude, he looks like he's having fun. No one can stop him. Obviously, his handle is one of the best handles in the world, and that's something I clearly need to work on. But, like, just from a floor spacing, shooting, like you said, I loved at Princeton. One thing people could say about me is I was in the gym. And, like, I had teammates that would, I'm like, hey, they'll come work out with me. And then 4 days later,
they fall off.
They're not there. And I'm there every day. That, like, literally, when they say making 1,000 shots, it was like a ritual. Like, if it's an off day Sunday, like, I'm making 1,000. And sometimes I take my breakfast to the gym, I take my lunch to the gym. And in between 500 reps, I'm watching a game and eating, and then back to the, and so there's something to it. Like we kind of talked about my free throw percentage. Like, I mean, I don't like talking, every time I talk about my free, I miss a free throw the next game. That's what happened this last game. But, like, but bro, like, I don't miss free throw. It's just, it's free, and it's routine, and it's repetition, and you can do it with your eyes closed. But in terms of getting paid at the highest level here in the NBA, you see more and more, you have guys like Giannis. You have guys like KD who are 7 foot and can shoot, but ultimately you have your stars, and then you need to have guys that can make shots around them. And so it's like, how can you continue at, for me, 6'2", 6'1", whatever, and you you know, with more size, how can you be effective in impact winning? And for me, it's like, if the ball goes in, I don't care if I was 5'11". Like, if you can't contest, or you jump by and I can do one, like, Patty Mills has made a career out of just being an elite floor spacer, and that's really kind of who I try and mold my game a little bit after, him and Bryn Forbes, and just continue to work on it and hammer that skill set home. So hopefully, you know, this season I continue to grow, evolve, and opportunity comes here soon. But, I mean, shooting, there's nothing like it.
Nothing like it, man. All right, last question of the episode. Obviously, We've talked about Steph Curry, we've talked about CJ McCollum, we talked about Dame Lillard, or we haven't talked about Dame Lillard, but just, you come from that pedigree of being like a smaller school guy. Do you take pride in being a smaller school guy at this level, or is that something you don't even think about?
No, 100%. So there's a clip, and I mean, I can tell you guys where to find it and pull it, but, you know, as a Potter, but a fellow podcaster. But I remember going against Ivan Rabb, and he's a center, whatever, power forward. He was number 2 in my class, 2015. I played against him when he was at Cal. And then, obviously, you know, he's highly recruited. I didn't get recruited by any of these schools. And you look at the guys who were ahead. Like, I think I have a spreadsheet of all, like, the top 256
guys. Oh, you're one of those guys.
I have a spreadsheet of every guy that was ranked
higher. Swire, you would be one of those guys if you weren't, like, in the Jordan Brand Classic and everything.
Cole
would
100%
be one of those.
He's on my list. Man.
Yeah, he's but on the
there's,
list.
There's a
yeah.
list. And it's not even, like, a grudge. Like, I you know, like, dude, if you get drafted, like, good for you. Like, I've always been like, I'll see you there. You better be ready, you know? And I mean, it's just constantly I've been overlooked, undervalued, and then I chip away, and then I reach whatever goal I wrote down. So I made it to the league. I got injured. Everyone's like, well, that's it for him, you know, and I get back, right? And then it's like, damn, he got cut from Orlando, and now we're in this kind of new experience. Let's talk in 3 months, okay? And I'll be back, right? But it's like you go up against these guys that were recruited higher than you, went to these big schools, and I mean, no disrespect, you got the Novas, the Cuses, the Dukes, the Kentuckys, and then you got Princeton. It's like, come on, man, I'm not supposed to be here. I'm never supposed to be here, but we are, and we keep working. So it's just a chip. I mean, it's a chip you hold on your shoulder, and you go into these environments. It's like, yeah, let's go.
Yeah, man, I mean, thank you so much. That was an amazing podcast with a fellow podcast. Yeah. You kind of took our jobs a little bit, Patty. But
no, man, it was fun.
Yeah, no, that was unbelievable. Real fun conversation. Appreciate you coming on. I think I'll be tuning in to the Run Your Own Race pod.
Appreciate you guys.
Can't wait for the home and home. But yeah, that was amazing. Thanks so much. Yeah, we could have kept this going for like way longer, Swider, but we don't want to take too much of your time.
No doubt. Thanks again, Dev, and. Obviously, we'll be together soon playing on the court, and yes, excited for that, man. So, good episode 11 for the Swider Show.